Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 37, recorded Thursday, April 20th, 2006. Podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on today's Travel Commons Podcast: the rise of the cranky traveler and spontaneous entertainment. Coming to you today from the San Mateo, California Marriott, conveniently located under the approach path to San Francisco Airport. Back out in the Bay Area this week with a sort of an existential question. Now, if San Jose is in the South Bay and Oakland is in the East Bay, am I in the Mid Bay? Who knows? But I am out here most of this week, a little easier than last week when I had caught the last flight out here from Chicago Sunday night, which put me in here about 1 a.m. Monday morning. Was here Monday, then flew across the country to Atlanta on Tuesday, and then back to Chicago on Wednesday night. This week, a bit easier. I caught the first flight out Tuesday morning, and we'll catch the first flight out back out Friday morning. You know, I gave up red eyes for Lent a number of years ago. It was just sort of false economy. Instead, I'll have a nice dinner with friends tonight. Actually, I'm meeting up with some Travel Commons contributors, Alan Marco and Chris Chufo. And then I'll do 4 hours of uninterrupted work on the flight back out tomorrow morning, getting into O'Hare just sort of after lunchtime. I had dinner Tuesday night in Mistral in Redwood City, a nice little restaurant deep in the heart of Oracle Land, and was surrounded by guys in blue blazers and no ties talking about CRM and middleware and revenue accelerators. I was eating alone, but ended up at a table outside rather than my normal mode, eating at the bar, because it was just jammed. Way too many people checking out wedding rings to allow for a relaxed dinner. And Mistral's not an easy place to find, sort of tucked away in a strip mall next to a dry cleaner, so I used what I think now is sort of the typical post-millennial way of finding a place to eat. I called a friend on his mobile. He was actually in Napa Valley in a tuxedo on the way to a nice dinner at French Laundry, and asked him for a restaurant recommendation. And he suggested Mistral. Well, where is it? Do you have web access? Well, hold on. I'm parked outside of Starbucks. So I fire up the laptop, enter Mistral Redwood City into Google, find a review on City Search, click on View Map, click on To Here, enter my Foster City address, drop the laptop into the passenger seat, and pull out. You know, I can see this being much more elegant in, say, 18 months when there's GPS in every phone and 2.5G or 3G cellular service rolled out pretty widely. But you know what? This way worked. It got me to dinner without a wrong turn. Following up, I mentioned in Travel Commons 32 that I had passed the 2 million mile mark with American Airlines, and what I thought was a fairly significant milestone was taking them a long time to recognize. Well, I finally did get something last month, a new Advantage Platinum card and two Platinum luggage tags, all with the words 2 million miles in a circle. I'll post a picture on the Travel Commons website of my new Platinum card. The real benefit, though, is lifetime Platinum status on American, though a couple of free chits for free box lunches would have been nice, too. In the last episode, podcast number 36, we had a story from a Canadian listener about deplaning in 40 below weather to get his luggage x-rayed as he was heading up to the Great White North. While telling that story, I remarked that, given that it's a Canadian telling the story, it must be 40 degrees below in Celsius, which I thought would have been much colder than 40 below in Fahrenheit. Chris Christensen of the Amateur Traveler podcast helped save me from promulgating sort of scientific illiteracy by pointing out that 40 below is the one temperature that is the same on both the Fahrenheit and the Celsius systems. Thanks to Chris for passing along that fun fact. In the same episode, I commented on paying $600 for my ticket to Orlando on TED, United's budget brand, and not even getting comped a $5 meal box. This prompted Dan O'Leary of the Hotel Coffee podcast to send along his thoughts about United's TED strategy.
Hi, Mark. It's Dan O'Leary with the Hotel Coffee podcast. I wanted to send you some audio feedback regarding episode 36 of Travel Commons, in particular the $600 fare you paid for your TED flight. Shortly after United invented TED and threw their hat into the ring of the low-cost airfare wars, I spoke to a United pilot about TED. He said they would get off a United airplane after flying from point A to B, and walk over and jump on a TED airplane and fly from B to C. So to him, as a pilot, the difference between the two airlines was transparent. In fact, I'm not so sure the difference between the airlines is all that clear to the company itself. In fact, in my opinion, and I can't stress that enough, in my opinion, I believe that TED is United saying plain-faced and boldly that it has absolutely no idea what to do in today's low-cost market. It is basically saying, let's try this and we'll call it TED. I'm curious to see what the airlines in the United States will look like 10 years from now. I don't believe they will look as they do today. Keep up the good work, Mark. I enjoy every episode of Travel Commons. Cheers.
Now, Dan, as a pilot, probably has a bit more insight into the operational aspect of TED, but I'll tell you from the passenger seat, TED looks just like another United plane, only painted orange and without a chance for a first-class upgrade. Alan Marco left this comment on the website regarding doing business while staying at a Disney resort. I was just at the Walt Disney World Swan and Dolphin for a conference this past week. Bad, bad, bad place for a conference, business-wise, that is. And the mid-80s vintage Michael Graves hotel room interiors drastically need upgrading. But I kind of like the whimsical building exteriors. I was expecting more from a facility that had the Disney name on it. I kept hearing so much about the Disney experience. Now, I know this hotel complex is not on campus and is operated by Starwood. The only good thing was the bed. But I expected more. Shula's Steakhouse and the Todd English Blue Zoo restaurants were excellent. But again, having only two good places to eat during a four-day conference does not make the grade as far as I'm concerned. I'm sure the folks with kids tagging along found it more than adequate as they could ship the significant other and the kids over to the park during the day. Well, I have to admit that, yes, I have done just that. There was a four-year stretch when my son and wife spent the first week in Mouseland while I navigated the bowels of the Swan and the Dolphin. They had a great time. Well, I just sort of muddled through. But thanks to Alan for those comments. Also on the website, a UK listener posted these thoughts under Travel Commons podcast number 35, where we talked about the reemergence of the TSA's foot fetish. I listened with interest to your comment about the TSA, which I am in complete agreement with, but a more irritating problem for non-US residents is the always awful experience of entering the U.S. and counting long, long snaking lines to get through immigration. I won't even attempt to describe the average demeanor of the uniformed staff to us aliens. This has become quite a hot topic in the travel sections of the UK press, with horrible stories of unwanted body searches or unwarranted body searches, etc. Interestingly, as a result of complaints about the transit experience at LAX for people flying from the UK to New Zealand, Air New Zealand has decided to cancel the route, and from the fall will be flying from Heathrow to New Zealand via Hong Kong. UK tourist numbers to Florida are also down 20%, and this is also being blamed largely on the hassle of entering the US. I love vacationing in the U.S., and pre-9/11, my wife and I would often travel to the East Coast for long weekends, but now we just don't think it's worth the stress involved. I'm currently planning a vacation on the West Coast for later in the year and have decided that we will fly to Vancouver and enter the U.S. at the checkpoint on Interstate 5. Well, listen, I think that this is a big problem for the U.S. The vast majority of foreign nationals that I know who have visited the U.S. come away with a very positive impression of the country and its people, and quite a bit different from the impression they arrived with, that impression that's often formed by stories in their national press. The post-9/11 security efforts that make it harder for people to study in the U.S. or vacation in the U.S., I think, just further isolate this country, and that just can't be good. Well, anyhow, thanks to everyone who sends along their thoughts and stories. The email address is comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or you can post them at the website at travelcommons.com.
Yeah, you're looking for some real dignity, yeah, in all the wrong places that you don't want to be. Point of purchase, heaven's above, all you really need is just a
So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is the rise of the cranky traveler. You know, I'm not quite sure what's going on, but I've noticed a lot more grumbling in the frequent traveler lines. You know, usually frequent travelers quietly shuffle through the switchback cordons, sort of heads down, checking emails or listening to their iPods. But it seems like more people are breaking their cone of silence. Working my way through the O'Hare premium security line on Tuesday, the woman in front of me turned and started to complain about the length of the security line. You know, it's airport rush hour, 7 a.m., she said. You'd think that they'd have all the security lines open, and she said, waving her arms toward the closed lines. And she was right. About half of them were closed. What good was all the money spent on installing additional security lanes and then all the machinery, the x-rays, the walk-through metal detectors, if they're not going to get staffed? I mean, you know, it's stupid stuff like this that seems to be getting under people's skin. Now, maybe it's because more people are traveling, causing planes and hotels to get fuller. Maybe it's because travel companies aren't staffing up to meet this increased volume, instead holding costs constant to increase profits. Maybe it's because people are finally realizing that the TSA hassles are becoming now are a permanent fixture in the travel experience. Or maybe it's just because frequent travelers have become spoiled whining brats. I don't know. Just sort of as an example of this, you know, here at the San Mateo Marriott, I'm just not overly thrilled, or none too chuffed, as the UK listeners would say, with the experience I'm having here. And I'm quite honestly not sure I'm coming back. There have been just enough annoyances to want me to look elsewhere next week. Of course, there's the paid parking, and we talked about that annoyance in previous Travel Commons podcasts. $14 a night to park in a surface lot around the side of the hotel. All the front spots are reserved for valet parking, which is $18 a night. And walking into my room, I find two double beds, and, you know, I'm a bit put off. My profile requests king beds, and the email confirmation that I received for my reservation said I was guaranteed a king bed. And then I look out the window to see that I'm right on top of the diesel emergency generator. You know, that's really nice. I hope we don't get an emergency drill here. And then I go up to the concierge lounge for a couple of bottles of water and just find my key doesn't work. And the workout room is tiny. You know, no huge faux pas, but it's lots of little hassles that mar the experience that I've come to expect from Marriott as a top-tier, platinum, frequent sleeper. Now, you know, I saw a note in the news earlier this week that made me think that maybe travel companies are starting to notice. United Airlines just created a new post, Vice President of Customer Experience. Now, this position is aimed at improving United's interaction with customers and linked to its strategy of developing targeted products and services for them. United said that all aspects of customer interaction with the airline, from reservation to check-in to in-flight experience and baggage delivery, will be reviewed and changes will be made accordingly. You know, sounds pretty promising until you look at the guy they named to take the job. United's first VP of Customer Experience is the guy leading up their TED discount carrier. That's the brand that, as Dan O'Leary said just a little bit earlier in this podcast, doesn't know what it wants to be. And then listen to the quote from United CEO Glenn Tilton. We know that segmenting the market, delivering the right product at the right price with the right customer experience, and doing so better than our competitors is the key to driving increased margins and profitability. So, the VP of Customer Experience isn't supposed to improve my experiences with United. He's just supposed to make more money from them. So the whining, I don't think the whining is going to stop. It's just going to be a little bit more expensive. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, spontaneous entertainment. You know, airports can be dreary places, especially airports like Oakland or Hartford, Connecticut, or White Plains, New York, or Philadelphia, or Sioux City, Iowa, which, by the way, has perhaps the best, or maybe it's the most apropos three-letter code, SUX. Well, though I'll tell you, be that as it may, you know, airports have been for years trying to add some entertainment value. I remember the time the airport in Cork, Ireland, after a massive reconstruction campaign, show up after it's all clear, everything's new, all the dust is settled. And what had they done? They'd added fireplaces and fish tanks at the baggage claim area. There's some entertainment for you. Well, you know, watch the fish while you're waiting for your bag to pop out. There's always in O'Hare, in O'Hare's United Terminal, you got that sort of new age moving fluorescent light sculpture on the ceiling of the underground walkway between concourses B and C. And now I don't know what's more entertaining there, looking up and watching the lights sort of run up and down the ceiling, or watching the people on the moving walkway who are looking up at the lights running up and down the ceiling. They're not paying attention that the moving walkway is ending, and they end up, you know, kind of stumbling and falling on their face. And then there's a whole pile up. It starts to look like a whole Three Stooges movie. That, you know, pick your entertainment on that one. And then always, there was always the infamous sort of shopping mall in Pittsburgh's new X terminal. Well, as I kind of hinted on my comment around the O'Hare entertainment, you know, again, it's not so much that that these new structures or these things that the airports are building are entertaining as much as the real entertainment at airport is the people. Kurt Taylor in his Empty Seat blog, and hey, Kurt, what happened to the Empty Seat podcast that went along with the Empty Seat blog? Well, anyhow, Kurt pointed to an entry in the Office Whisper blog about people watching in airports. I'll put a link in the show notes. It was pretty good, sort of snarky stuff. The spatially challenged backpack guy. For some reason, he needed to turn around a lot. Every time he did, he would hit somebody else near him with his overloaded bag. Or the magazine guy. You're not fooling anybody into thinking you're looking for a fitness magazine when you have a gut bigger around than my garbage can. Just grab the skin mag on the top shelf and slink off to the restroom. You're creeping the rest of us off by just standing there jingling the change in your pockets. Last Sunday, though, I had my best experience with spontaneous airport entertainment. You know, I was none too happy about having to fly out on a Sunday night. As I mentioned in the top of the podcast, I took the last flight out of O'Hare to SFO, but still had to leave early from a friend's birthday dinner that night. And, there's just something about flying out on a Sunday that I just hate. No matter how late on Sunday you go, it just compresses the whole weekend and makes for a very long week. So walking down the concourse, I saw a bunch of people standing back from the gate looking around. That's never a good sign, and I was already in a cranky mood. You know, what is this? A broken plane, a missing crew, a jammed jetway? Well, to my surprise, it was none of the above. Instead, it looked like an episode of Fame had broken out. There's a bunch of teenagers doing a dance routine in front of the gate agent's desk, complete with musical accompaniments from somebody's Bose boombox. You know, even the most jaded frequent traveler had to stop and watch. I took a little bit of video with my mobile phone, so it's pretty lousy quality, but it'll give you a little bit of sense. I'll put it up on the Travel Commons website. And when the number finally ended and the dancers went back to eating their Chinese takeout food, I walked up to someone who looked like adult supervision and asked her what was going on.
So what band is it? What dance troupe is this?
Oh, it's the Lee High School Winter Guard.
Where's Lee High School?
In San Jose.
Oh, okay. Where are you guys coming from?
Dayton.
Dayton?
Yeah, they just had their championships there.
Oh, good. How'd you guys do?
16th in the world.
Oh, good.
Not sure if you could make that out from the IRA recording, actually all the kids talking in the background after their performance, but they were they were sort of a flag band or a flag dance troupe, I guess, from a high school in San Jose, California. They had just gotten back from the World Championships in Dayton, Ohio, or they were on their way flying back, making a connection through O'Hare. And depending upon whether you count disqualifications or not, they either came in 16th place or 14th place. But they all looked like they had a pretty good time. And I'll tell you, for me, it was a pleasant surprise. And it turned a cranky traveler into at least a bemused one. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 37. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. I've got a 6 a.m. flight to Chicago tomorrow, so while I've got this recorded today, Thursday, I probably won't get it up to the server until Friday night. The bridge music on today's show is from the IODA PromoNet, a new source of PodSafe music sponsored by the Independent Online Distributor Alliance, IODA. There you go. Check the show notes for the artist details. The website is PromoNet. Let me see if I can say that three times fast. PromoNet.iodalliance.com. Hey, if you've got a story, thought, comment, gripe, moans, groans, cranky cries of anguish, the voice of the traveler, especially the cranky traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. And thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, audio files, or post comments on the website. As always, I really appreciate it. So until we talk again, take care, safe travels, bye now.